My problems have all gone. There's no one to deride me. But you gotta have friends.
Stop singing! Well, it's no wonder you don't have any friends.
Wow. Only a true friend would be that truly honest.
Hello and welcome to the television content warning that is the Libero podcast, containing strong language and things that some viewers might find disturbing. I am your host, Richard Mead, and with me, broadcasting scenes of a sexual nature, is Matt Pritchard. Say hello, Matt.
Hello, hello. I think that I'm the disturbing thing you were just talking about, I'm imagining.
Disturbing scenes of a sexual nature. it's been a big week, but we are two people short. We're half a team. Carrying it on our backs. We'll try and make it this kind of bite-sized edition where we get into it. Matt, it's been a busy week. There's been a lot of goals.
Yeah, it has been a lot of goals. And yeah, it's just the two of us, obviously. But Chris is on holiday and Laney's pretending to be busy. But yeah, there's a lot of goals in the Premiership this weekend. A lot more than I can remember for quite a long time. And just, you know, we had those ridiculous games a couple of seasons ago where there was four or five goals every game. But yeah, there was a lot around this weekend.
A lot of goals, and four of them coming at Watford. An amazing result for Watford, and a result really they deserved. Did you see the game?
I saw the majority of the game. I saw the kind of extended highlights of it. Where to start? I think we could probably do half a show on United's last three games, pretty much. We could probably do a whole show on United's last three games. And I'd forgotten that they actually lost in Europe as well midweek, and this has three games on the bounce now that they've lost.
Yeah, unusual, really unusual for Man U and for obviously Mourinho, and a lot will be made of it. Two things, like before we get into the details of the match, like just regarding the three games and the you know the Mourinho's record coming out of Chelsea and coming into Man U. Obviously the Chelsea thing was seen as a bit of a blip at the time, and he's just taken over Man U, albeit spent a lot of money on two or three big players. I mean, do you read any more into this than this being transitional, or do you think this is Mourinho maybe losing his touch, or the overwhelming kind of intimidation of like the club and that he's always wanted to manage or anything like that?
I'd love it to be him losing his powers. I've got a distinct hatred for this guy and always have done.
So I
would love it to be him losing his touch. I think there's an element of transition to it. I think the United squad is relatively unbalanced, and it's kind of not unbalanced in certain wrong players in certain wrong positions, but certain players who are commanding positions that perhaps they shouldn't be commanding or wouldn't be commanding in other teams had they been signed as a fresh player. So you look at, I'm talking about Rooney, quite obviously.
Of course, obviously, let's get onto it. I mean, Rooney in this game, and certainly in the last few games, has been nothing short of shocking. I mean, I was all over the WhatsApp group while watching this game, just absolutely slating him off with scuffed crosses, scuffed passes, misplaced passes. He's, you know, on the ball, off the ball, he was all over the place. He just looked like a man completely out of sorts.
Yeah, I mean, I've been saying this for a little while, and I think, you know, I've been harping on about it, so I'm not gonna go too much into what I've said in the past, but in this game, he just looked, and I didn't see the start of the game. Actually, I just caught the team sheet when it was announced, and I couldn't quite work out where he was playing, but I listened to it on the radio coming back in the car, and it just seemed like he was playing on the right-hand side of a three-man midfield. And I don't understand why he's getting into these squads, and it means that they're completely having to change a system or play better players out of position to accommodate him. Mm. So you've got the world's most expensive, or one of the world's most expensive players, and he's playing him in a position that just doesn't seem to suit him.
He's in a limited role, isn't he?
Yeah, he's not getting the best out of Pogba. And at the same time, he's not getting the best out of Zlatan either, because, you know, Zlatan does like the drop off. He does like to drop off and pick up the ball. But he's finding when he's dropping off Rooney and or Pogba are in that space at the same time. And it just seems like he's tried a couple of different systems now to work out where's the best place to play Pogba, where's the best place to play Rooney. And a couple of weeks ago, he tried playing Rooney in the 10 position behind Zlatan with Fellaini and Pogba. Was that in the I was in the derby, wasn't it? He tried to play Fellaini and Pogba as a two-man midfield. I
mean, two-man midfield, which
I'm not a world-class manager. I knew that wasn't going to work. The balance that is completely tits up.
Yeah, I mean, and City, you know, City were all over them that first half as well. And especially in midfield, they could not get the ball for love nor money in midfield in that game, which obviously we've covered before. But as you say, that's not been worked out. We've got, as you say, there's three players there potentially at some point all wanting to be in the same space in Rooney, Pogba, Ibrahimovic. And obviously, you're limiting the quality of players like Pogba when you say, no, you're going to play this very limited defensive midfield role. And it's no surprise that both Pogba and Rooney had bad games. I mean, one thing that I thought was really telling, and I said this at the time, was the reaction for Rashford's goal. I mean, this spoke, you know, pictures tell a thousand words, et cetera, et cetera. But this really spoke volumes to me. When the ball dropped, Rashford, I mean, don't get me wrong, it was nearer Rashford than it was Rooney. The first thing Rooney did when the ball dropped was throw his hands up in the air and stay static, claiming for a pen. While the first thing Rashford did was move towards the ball and slot it in for a goal anyway. And I was like, is that like just one player being quicker or being closer to the ball? Or is there something in that that Rooney's, you know, hunger, Rooney's drive, Rooney's maybe ability isn't there. It isn't there. The attitude's gone. The attitude's a bit wrong now. And certainly on the back of, you know, a few questionable performances and obviously the media on his back, you do wonder if he's questioning, you know, his own skills and his confidence is going a bit.
Yeah. I mean, we can't take too much away from Watford. I just want to make kind of one final point from me on United, and this is more to my ignorance than anything else. I didn't watch a lot of Italian football when Pogba was tearing it up there.
Yeah,
but I still don't really know what type of midfielder Pogba is. I don't know what his best position is. Is he a 10? Is he a box-to-box centre midfielder? Is he a ball-playing centre midfielder? This is one thing I'm really missing about him. I don't know exactly the best position for him to be playing in. Mm. Most players who come to the Premiership, you kind of know the type of player they are. If they're a wide player, you know if they're a kind of an out and out wing, or if it's someone like Hazard who's going to drift back inside.
Yeah.
You know, someone like, you know, Granit Xhaka or someone like that who's come over, you know they're more of a destroyer or a, you know, will break up the game and get the ball moving.
Got a red in them or whatever,
Yeah, but, you know, I'm still a little bit struggling with Pogba, and it might be down to my ignorance, but I'm still not exactly sure the exact role he's going to play at United, and I think United are struggling with that as well.
I mean, there's no questioning your ignorance. I mean, you didn't know who Stormzy was, so, you know.
That's my age, not my ignorance.
I mean, but you're right. I mean, you're right on that, and you're right also that we shouldn't take away anything from Watford, who deserved this win. Manu had no answer for them once they seemed to switch to four at the back, once they got their shape right. Manu didn't know how to break that down. I think Watford were the better team, and obviously super sub Zuniga. Making a huge impact coming on, like, was it 60 seconds? Something ridiculous after it come on. That's a goal. And also, I'll win you a pen. Yeah. Thanks.
I thought Watford were going to struggle this season. And, you know, they still might struggle. But this is an amazing result for them.
Yeah.
And Etienne Capoue, or Capoue, whichever you want to pronounce it, has started on fire. I had him pegged as a destroyer.
Yeah.
A holding midfielder player who just kicks the ball, kicks players, keeps the, yeah. And it's just don't know where this has come from at all. What's this, is it his fourth or fifth goal now of the season?
It's incredible. I mean, he's fantasy league dream, isn't he, at the moment? If you picked him up early.
I still
none
keep
of us
on,
probably did.
Yeah, I still keep on telling myself he's not going to score, and every time he scores.
Yeah, I'm like that. And I keep telling myself Mahrez is going to bag hatfuls, but there we go. The other thing, I mean, like you said, I thought Watford might struggle. Basically, one, they've got a new manager, and two, I think they either had the joint highest or the highest amount of transfers in the Prem. And also, with like the kind of transitions that they've had over the last few years, this regular turnover of manager, this regular turnover of players, you think this is going to run out, but they've started the season so well. You know, credit to them. And credit to that pen as well, which I thought might break the goal. That's how you do
it. Yeah, that was an absolute howitzer of a penalty.
That's exactly how you do it. One last thing before we leave Man U behind and Watford behind. What do we expect from Man U this season? I mean, when we were talking about the Man U City game earlier in the season, pretty much all of us, the absent two included, kind of tipped Man U to to edge them, which they clearly didn't. They weren't anywhere near it. And City on current showing, so far ahead of Man U. Do we yeah. think Man U are going to be up there? Do we think they're going to be top four?
Well, I spoke to a lot of people, a lot of people I know and a lot of people I work with, and at the start of the season, when I say the start of the season, you know, the first two or three games when you saw United, you're thinking, shit, they're going to be, you know, the title's going back to Manchester, and it'll be the City or United.
Yeah.
But in the past, you know, since the international break and looking at them, I think the Manchester derby was absolutely a perfect representation of the gulf between United and City at the moment. And it showed how far United are still off being a top, you know, being a challenger to City. You
absolutely.
Know, it might fall apart for City in January, but you can't see it.
No, not at this rate. They look stunningly confident, and we'll come onto them in a bit. But we'll go from Watford to West Brom, because another absolutely incredible 4-2 game, and once again starring West Ham, and once again being on the wrong end of it. This was a bit of a shocker. West Ham were laughably bad in defence.
It's so difficult to know where to start with this.
I mean, where do you want to go?
Probably my favourite part of this game was Chadley's second, the counter attack. Well, I say counter attack goal from the West Ham corner.
Oh, amazing!
That's one of my favourite goals I've seen this season. Just because as it bounced towards the halfway line, you're expecting 2-3 West Ham players to be there. Suddenly the camera pans out, and Adrian's just standing on his line, shitting himself. It was absolutely brilliant. It's like, they can't have been, you know, what was it, like 30, 40 minutes into the game, if that, and they're hounding the 11 men in the box, or 10 men in the box for a corner.
That goal was straight, and anyone who's played it will totally agree with me, straight out of FIFA 14, where the most dangerous defensive position you could be in was an attacking corner.
It's where you see Zlatan just smash his controller against the floor. Slaven Bilic slam his controller against the floor.
Shearer tore them apart, rightly so, on Match of the Day, for the defending. The scuffed clearances, the handballs, obviously the penalty,
this guy they've got at left back looks absolutely shite. Manuasa or something like that. I can't pronounce his name. He's come from Olympiacos for £6 million. I don't know how they got more than one from him. He looks absolutely terrible for the penalty. He gave away the free kick on the far side of the pitch for handball.
Yeah.
And then went back to his left back position, and then from the subsequent cross gave away the penalty for handball.
Yeah. I mean, it's Masuaku.
Masuaku.
Not a way to enamour yourself with the fans. Needless handballs. He looked complacent. He looked completely out of touch, out of his league. But then it's hard to say, oh God, it's all down to him, when the whole back line looked all over the place. And this is something that's been coming for West Ham, and I don't mean that in a nasty way. I mean that they've been regularly conceding a lot of goals right back into last season. It's just last season they were scoring more. They were doing the, you know, Newcastle entertainers, we'll score more than they do, it'll look good. And it did look good, and it was exciting football to watch. But some of that's catching up with them now. You know, they've obviously regularly getting injuries to Andy Carroll. They've struggled to find a striker. They've been unlucky with you know, a couple of their new signings getting injured. And now, you know, they look really, really frail at the back. Really frail at the back.
You can't go see, well, we'll come on to it again on the next game. You can't go see 8 goals in 2 games. In no league in the world can you concede 8 goals in 2 games. It's absolutely scandalous that they've managed to do that. And looking at their backline, you look at it and think, what are they thinking? They've got Nordveit, they played him at right back, I think. Mm-hmm. He's at best a holding midfielder, at worst a centre back. And then you go to centre back, they're playing Ogbonna, who I've not been massively, you know, he's not done much for me since he came to the Premiership. Still playing James Collins. I don't know how many weeks I'm going to harp on about this. You cannot play James Collins in a Premiership team and expect to not concede goals.
The thing though, like, and the thing is, they are doing what they did last season, but they're just not getting away with the shit defending. So they've, you know, they've scored in, I think, is it every Premiership game they've scored in? They scored against Bournemouth. It was 2-1 against Chelsea, 3-1 against Manchester City. So they're even scoring against the bigger teams, and they've scored 4 goals in the last 2 games, but they're not winning anything. They've only won against Bournemouth. The rest they've lost. So it's all at the defence. They can still come forward. They are still scoring goals. It's just, it's at the expense of an absolute calamitous back line.
Because I actually think Adrian's quite a good goalkeeper. I don't think the issue's in goal at all. It's all in front of him. And, you know, it wasn't as if, actually, in front of the defence, you had Kiati and Noble, so it's not as if they're missing anything there. It just looks like their back line has no structure to it whatsoever.
Quite. And, I mean, worth a mention as well, Piatt's, I think, hit the ground running. I mean, people were saying, well, he's not scored a goal since Christ knows when, or, you know, I think it's April, or you've got to remember that he's just come off a big international tournament where France went deep into the tournament and he played a lot. And he created more chances than any other player this weekend. So I think it's a bit harsh to go, oh, well, once Piatt hits his stride, we'll be up and running. But I think he has hit his stride. I think it's the other teams, other players around him that need to give more support.
But, yeah, for sure. But again, not to, you know, I know we've harped on about the two losing teams so far, but again, great. Well, a much needed result for West Brom this, I think. And Chadley took my hitting the ground running. Yeah. The thing I noticed for his second goal, if you watch, I can't remember for the life of me who it is. It might be Rondon who's carrying the ball away with a back heel for it. The gut that Chadley busts to get to that is unbelievable.
What you want to see from
a
player.
He is breaking his balls to get there and make that an easy goal. Because, you know, Rondon's going through. If he leaves him to that, it's a one-on-one with a keeper that he's had 30, 40 yards to think about. And, you know, those do get harder. I'm not speaking from any kind of experience here, but those do seem to get harder the further you are out. But, you know, Chadley busting a gut to get there meant that Rondon had that option just to slip him in for the tap-in.
And also, I think that was their fourth goal as well, wasn't it? Was Chadley's goal their fourth? His second goal?
Yeah, it might have been. So I think it was this. I thought I said it was their second, but it was Chadley's second.
Yeah, I think it was their last goal. Excuse me, any listeners, if I'm wrong there. But whether it was third or whether it's fourth, you know, if they're already ahead in the game, you know, by 2 goals or more, and he's still busting that gut to get the extra mileage, you know, to get the extra cushion of another goal, and that. You know, your fans will love you for that, for putting in that kind of effort. And, you know, what a home debut.
I was surprised when Spurs let him go, I've got to be honest. I never thought he was a top, like a world-class player for them, but he was a good squad player for them, but, you know, not everyone wants to be a good squad player. Kind of more power to him for taking a move to a smaller club just to play some football.
West Brom, I mean, this would have been a massive boost for Pulis, who's been under a lot of pressure lately. You know, it's kind of well detailed the rumours of the tensions behind the scenes between Pulis and the chairman and all the stuff that's gone on at the back with, you know, do they sell Berahino, do they not sell Berahino, and all that kind of stuff. But you know, we've heard about the press sort of gathering around him now, but this kind of result will be absolute tonic for them. They'll love that. And if they can take that on and take it forward, there's no reason to think, you know, that they'll be in any trouble this season. But, you know, they didn't have the greatest transfer windows. We'll have to see if this is a one-off or if it's something they can sustain.
Yeah, you know, I think that they'll be where a Tony Pulis team normally finds themselves. They'll be probably between 10 and 15. I would imagine. If I had to nail my colours to the mast, I'd say they'd probably end up between 10 and 15.
Cool. I mean, let's go from a 4-2 to a 4-1. Another team that just can't defend. So many goals this week. It's brilliant. Stoke, who find themselves bottom, with that team on paper, I don't think anyone would have been going, oh yeah, that they're going to really struggle out the blocks this season.
No, and if you look at their team, I sat and watched a decent amount of this game as well. It's a common theme here. Again, if you look at Stoke's team, I think we spoke about this in one of the podcasts earlier on in the season, saying put their team down on paper, and that's a team that should be finishing top 8.
Absolutely.
And out of that team, they're only missing Shaqiri and Jack Butland. and, you know, Jack Butland is a very good goalkeeper, but Shea Given's not a mug. You know, he might be getting on a bit, but of all the goals I've seen be scored against him in the last few weeks, not even a handful, I doubt I could put down to Shea Given.
Yeah. I mean,
it's not as if it's been goalkeeping Rick after goalkeeping Rick.
I think it's fair to say that he's not in the prime of his career. But
no, he's a 400 years old.
And, you know, he's perhaps, you know, where other players might be better positioned, et cetera, et cetera. But they, you know, they're coulda, woulda kind of things. The fact is they've got Shea Given in goal, and like, it's one thing to have Shea Given in goal. It's another thing to be absolutely calamitous in defence. And that's what they are. I mean, they've been, is it the third time this season Stoke have conceded four? I mean, I know we're concentrating on the losing team so far, but they've given us plenty of reason to talk about them.
Yeah, again, it's just calamitous defending as well. But, you know, Ryan Shawcross is in the middle of that defence with, you know, I've never rated that Bruno as Martin Indy, so I was quite surprised when they signed him on loan. But, you know, Shawcross is in that defence. Glenn Johnson's in that defence. Half that defence was there last season. And they weren't getting drilled 4-1 and 4-2 and 4-0. You know, it's, you got to ask questions about what's going on there. You know, looking in front of them, they've got Glenn Whelan, Gianni Mbula and Joe Allen. Again, three, well, Mbula's obviously new to the Premiership, but Joe Allen and Glenn Whelan have been around the Premiership for a long time. How are they conceding this many goals and, you know,
what's going on
not
there?
Not being able to adjust.
Yeah, absolutely. And as we know, and we speak about plenty of times, you've got to find your feet soon. It's one thing to lose a game, it's one thing to lose a couple of games, but if you lose a couple of games heavily, like West Ham done, like Stoke have done, it doesn't take long before that becomes a mentality, before that becomes a kind of, you know, a dip that you're in that you find it very hard to get out of. Let's talk about Crystal Palace though, because everybody likes to talk about Pardew's success. I mean, four different goal scorers: Tomkins, Dan, MacArthur, Townsend.
I'm just going to go out on a limb and say I've been talking about West Ham losing James Tomkins
again all season.
I'm going to harp on about it again because he scored this weekend, and the team he signed for won. They won 4-1, and the team he left lost 4-2. There's a direct correlation between.
Do we want to trademark the Tomkins effect or?
I like it. Yeah,
I like it.
Yeah. I think it's a good result for Crystal Palace. Great. Again, I think as West Brom, they needed a result like this because they spent a fair bit of money in the last 12 months or so. And I think that's kind of slipped under the radar a little bit because no one's been astronomical money. But for a club like Palace, they've spent on Tompkins, they've spent on Townsend, they've spent on Benteke. You know, I know they've got a bit of money back from Balassi, but they have thrown some money around, and they needed people like Townsend and people like Benteke to really settle quickly and start getting the goals. And, you know, this is the second game I've seen where they've played with Benteke now, and he looks like the player, or he looks like he could potentially be the player they were missing. I think Palace have struggled since they came back into the Premiership, however many years ago it was. The one player they've really, really struggled to get is a striker who can get them either goals or can facilitate the rest of the team more goals. You know, they tried Adebayor, Shamak, Connor Wickham, Dwight Gale.
Yeah.
A massive list and didn't find that player they were looking
for. I think that second sentence you say is absolutely key because it's one thing to have a striker who scores goals, but that doesn't just mean that they score goals. It means that the defence is preoccupied with someone like Benteke. You know Benteke's a threat. You know he's got goals in him. He's an aerial threat. He's good on the floor. He's hugely powerful. When he's on his game, he can be unplayable. And that's why he got that huge move to Liverpool. But not just that, like, what happens? He then draws players in. They have to necessarily worry about him. Whereas someone like Connor Wickham, you're going to feel, with all due respect to Connor Wickham, fairly confident about marking him, given his goals record. That means that, you know, the like of Zaha, who has scored this season, the likes of Townsend, who's now scored this season, and they get freedom. They get more room for manoeuvre. They get more room to attack. And, you know, four players who weren't Benteke scored at the weekend, but I think it shows that it's having a focal point and having dangerous players who can attract, you know, multiple players, multiple defenders, really gives you that extra room and really gives you other, gives other players the chance to score more goals.
Yeah, I mean, Stoke got a decent goal back. You know, I know Richard's goal late was pretty one, good, though. But yeah, very late. I mean, I don't think he was chasing to get the ball back. But
there we go.
Yeah, it's a difficult time for Stoke, but you know, hopefully, I don't like Alan Pardew that much, but I like the Crystal Palace fans.
Crystal Palace have got fantastic fans.
Yeah, so I hope for them that they can go on a bit of a run now and kind of have a decent season. It'd be nice to see them perhaps win a cup, especially after what happened last time.
And for Liverpool, the clearance from Gary Cahill isn't good enough. It's one touch, and it's absolutely brilliant.
Hello and welcome back to the Libero podcast. Thanks for joining us for the second half of this week's show. Time to move on to what I think many consider the biggest game of the weekend, Friday night's game, Chelsea versus Liverpool. A big win for Liverpool, a real statement of intent. 2-1 win. They won their last season, they won this season. What do we make of Liverpool's chances at the title this season?
I think they're going to struggle for consistency. I think there's going to be times where they look like, even in the first few games, they look like they're going to score a lot of goals, but I think they are going to leave themselves open to quite a lot of chances. I think they're getting back to the position where they were when they had Sterling, Suarez and Sturridge, where they look like they can open teams up and they look like they can score goals. Not in the same way as they did with those three when they were together, but they do look like they're going to create a lot of chances. And they certainly did create quite a few against Chelsea on Friday night.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, two things to mention for me. One was something I know that you've mentioned before, which is sort of Chelsea's lack of solidarity at the back, something that Chelsea have been known for in the past, where built obviously on that Mourinho foundation from years ago, and then again more recently when he took over the club again. You're used to Chelsea being able to defend as a team, to not concede, you know, a team that concedes very few goals, and now that they didn't look good at the back. I mean, it's something that's run throughout this podcast as a theme, but they did not look good at the back, and Liverpool took full advantage of that.
Yeah, I mean, Ivanovic. When I've seen him start badly in games in the last couple of years, he really struggled to get it back from starting badly.
Yeah.
And in this game, he started pretty badly and just went downhill from there. He was captain for the night with Terry being injured, and just didn't ever look comfortable at right back. There were times where he was giving away stupid free kicks. He was, like I say, he was captain for the night for the Lovren goal. He gave away such a pointless free kick where, Coutinho, I think it was on the touchline going nowhere, and Ivanovic just plows into the back of him.
Yeah.
And from the subsequent corner, from the subsequent free kick, they then concede the first, which again was horrendously badly defended.
I mean, he took a battering last season, obviously, with their poor form under Mourinho. Ivanovic and Matic were two players that really took a real pounding from the press and from their own fans, really. And he looked more like that player in this game than he has done in quite some time. It, like you say, he's the kind of player that you just tend to get a feel for whether he's up for the game in the first 15 minutes. And if he isn't, he's not going to claw that back. You should sub him.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's really always been the case with him. You know, he's been a pretty decent performer for Chelsea over the years, but certainly of late, he like you say, he seems to get either something in his mind or he's not up for it in the game, and you just need to hook him. You need to get someone else on, because he can't claw those performances back. Someone who did put in a good performance at the back, I felt, was Lovren. I mean, obviously, easy to point him out because he scored his goal, but he made more clearances and more tackles than any of his teammates, which, you know, and he looked as solid as I think I remember seeing him in a red shirt. I thought he played really well, and credit to Liverpool. They seem to be gathering round Klopp now, who absolutely sort of seems to love that kind of siege mentality. He seems to love to get everybody together to really get a bond between them and get them working. And start of this season, you know, they're a little bit inconsistent, but they've looked good. I think they'll be happy with their league position at the moment.
Yeah, for sure. I thought Henderson's goal, I'm sure most people have kind of waxed lyrical about it, but it was an absolutely beautiful finish. His control was perfect, just kind of dropped into his path, and it was a lovely, lovely finish. I think Gary Cahill's been pulled apart for this, probably, I think, a little bit too harshly. I think his clearance wasn't the best clearance in the world, but it's not as if he's rolled one across the 6-yard box for a tap in. He's got what he could on it to clear it from the 6-yard box. Yeah. And it's just unfortunately dropped almost perfectly into Henderson's stride. And then Henderson's hit a shot that he probably won't hit for the next 10 seasons.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, it's nice to see Henderson playing well. Obviously he's English. He's had a lot of promise about him. A lot of people talked him up. He's lost some consistency in the last season or so, but if he's regaining that and he's regaining his confidence under Klopp, it'll be nice to see what he can bring to their midfield. And as you say, a fantastic goal that's right to wax lyrical about.
Well, our man from the Mersey Lane seemed to have a theory last season of why Henderson was playing so badly and was in and out of the team so much. And I'm sure we'll come on to talk about this later on in the season, but he seemed to think that Henderson was carrying, or it was known around Liverpool that Henderson was carrying, quite a bad injury that was pretty much stopping him from running.
That won't help. And so,
no, it definitely won't, but it depends who you play for. but it was quite well known around Liverpool that he was playing with pretty much an injury that would stop him from getting anywhere near his top speed or top ability movement wise. This is why he was in and out of the team last season. And when he was in, he was kind of struggling to really get into games as he did when he first went there. So hopefully he's had a lighter summer than normal and he's kind of over that injury now. Because I like Henderson. I think Henderson's definitely got a role to play for Liverpool, and I think he's got a role to play for England as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, let's be honest, and we spoke about when we spoke about Big Sam's first game, it's not like England are blessed with a plethora of ultra-talented young people that we can suddenly bring into the team or try out new systems. Like, people like Henderson do represent, like, if we're going to change it up, if we're going to bring in a player, even if they've been played there before, if we're going to change systems, how can he affect a match? And if he is, you know, why it was so pleasing to see people like Butland and Barkley play well. We want to see more of that. We want to see these English players do well and play well in big games and in big leagues. Speaking of big games and big scorelines, which we can't leave alone, this week was amazing for scorelines. City trouncing Bournemouth. I mean, not one that I don't think anyone didn't see coming, but this was, and I think I've got it down on the notes here, just Man City looking scarily close to the finished product already under Guardiola. Just, at this rate, they're going to absolutely tear it up, aren't they?
Yeah, I think this is one of those games where it was a bit of a nothing game, and you very rarely say that about a 4-0, but it was so seemingly straightforward for them. It was a 4-0 win without really battering Bournemouth, but at the same time without ever being
concerned
about Bournemouth. So it was a really weird result, because if you look at it on paper, you're thinking, oh shit, Bournemouth must have been terrible, and you know, City just dominated them and tore them to pieces. And actually looking at the game, it really wasn't that bad. They just seemed to just score when they wanted to score and just kind of took the game away from Bournemouth slowly, and it just seemed like they were never ever concerned that Bournemouth might get back into the game, which is such a painful position to be in when you're a rival supporter watching them just kind of click so easily. Yeah. You know, Gundogan, I can never pronounce his name. First game or second game for them, just comes on, scores a goal. They're missing Sergio Aguero. In seasons past, when they were missing Aguero, they looked like they were really struggling.
Yeah, absolutely.
But Iheanacho's kind of come in, and Iheanacho plays a very different role to the one Aguero plays. He's not so much the goal scorer. Well,
you say that, but he's lethal. If you look at his stats, his finishing stats, and I won't quote them because I don't know them off by heart, but his stats in terms of shots on goal to goal is ridiculous. Like, it's ridiculously high. And like you said, you know, this team is adapting to, you know, oh, well, we've lost Aguero. That's all right. We'll score four goals with four different players from across the park. Don't worry about it. And, you know, the emphasis is now, it's kind of a very much a team game. When you, when you went to City before, there was always two or three players you were worried about. You was always kind of, oh, well, what if Aguero has a game? Or what if Touré suddenly decides he's the world's best player again? Or, you know, David Silva. You know, you're looking at those players and think, oh, they're the ones that could really hurt us. Now, it's from everywhere. Sterling's found his feet. Iheanacho's scoring.
Yeah, if you look at that list, none of those players are playing.
Yeah.
If you look back two or three seasons ago, the spine of their team, Hart, Kompany, Touré, Aguero, Silva, none of those five players
are playing.
That's
a really good point. It's a really interesting point too. That's a really interesting.
It kind of just occurred to me, and it's absolutely ridiculous because you think, give it two or three seasons ago when they didn't retain the title, you knew if you shut down two of those players, they wouldn't beat you. If they were missing one of those players, you knew you could get at them. You know, if City missed Kompany, you knew you had a good chance of getting at them because the replacements around him weren't good enough. Now, none of those five players were there, and they just kind of, I know it's a home, I know it was only Bournemouth, but it just so comfortable and so easy.
Yeah, and it's not like they've struggled for goals in other games. I mean, you know,
no.
This is the thing. This is the thing that will worry, you know, teams across the Premiership is this is a Man City project that apparently isn't finished, that has got another transfer window in it this season, and already looks like, you know, like I said before, the finished product. And when you've got Man U, who were, you know, people were tipping for making a challenge this season, already looking like they're not quite getting it together, and, you know, Rooney misfiring, as we've spoke about before, and we don't need to reiterate, and you know, a few players not quite gelling there yet, and City instantly gelling, seemingly instantly gelling, and instantly off to a good start. Although it is worth mentioning, if you weren't going to do so already, that they did have a very good start last season. You know, they did get off, they got off to a great start last season, and that fell off. But there'll be no, you know, announcement of a managerial change this season, so let's see if that happens.
No. And the thing I've noticed that he did sign a few players, and they did have some world-class players there, but he's already seemingly making players better. Mm. Kolarov in this game was unbelievably good. And we all know Kolarov's got an unbelievable free kick. You all know he can spank a ball. You all know he's a little bit frail defensively, but what you kind of don't see is the player that he's now been turned into already. Jermaine Genus did a really good piece on him on Match of the Day, basically talking about how when given space, he's got one of the most accurate left foots. And we kind of knew he had a thunder bastard of a left foot anyway, but the accuracy to which he was hitting cross-field balls and diagonal balls against Bournemouth was unbelievably good.
This is the thing with Guardiola's and other great managers as well, is they walk into a team, and we mentioned it a few podcasts ago, that they recognise traits in players that are perhaps more useful in other positions, or that they should be utilising more, or that they can get more out of their game with. And suddenly that player's twice the player they were, and it, you know, and then all of a sudden they don't need to sign another backup because suddenly Fabian Delph's a world-class player, and you don't really know how that happened.
I forgot Fabian Delph existed.
So did Fabian Delph. So, I mean, now Man City top, maximum points, 15 points, 5 wins out of 5. And second to them at Everton, who, I mean, enjoying a wonderful start to the season. 3-1 win against Middlesbrough.
Yeah, again, I saw the majority of this game as well, actually. But somebody I know we haven't spoken about as much, and I think has flown a little bit under the radar, unless you've watched a couple of Everton's games, is Gueye.
Yeah. Gueye.
I don't really know where this has come from. He was in a, and we all know he was in a team that was an absolute shower last season. So it's very difficult to show how good you are in a team that is literally dying on its ass. Yeah. But he seems to be, again, when he signed for Villa, my limited knowledge, mostly found from Football Manager, was that he was basically just a holding midfield player who's there to protect the back four and break at the play. You're thinking, you know, everyone's trying to find an N'Golo Kante. And so when they signed him, you think, okay, this guy is going to be that same sort of player. But actually, if you look like it, he's not just doing what N'Golo Kante does. He's actually playing a little bit further up the field as well, and actually influencing the play further forward.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, he's been an inspirational signing, better than I think any of Everton's signings like thus far under Koeman. I mean, and also, I mean, let's not forget, for really relatively small money, £7.1 million, looking back at a transfer window where players went for £90 million and, you know, I'm not going to call them average player, but Bolasie, you know, who's had fits and starts of being a good player, has gone for 25, maybe raising to 30, you know, and yeah. Idrissa Gueye went for 7.1. I mean, I'm sure the statisticians amongst listeners and amongst the football clubs, and probably one of the reasons he was signed, will know that he had more interceptions and tackles combined across Europe's top five leagues last season. Now, obviously, as you say, that is in a shower of a team. So what does that mean in a shower of a team? I'm sure goalkeepers at the bottom of the league save a lot more shots if they're at the bottom of the league because they face more. So I suppose there is a little bit of, you know, if you want to get boring about it, data cleansing to do on that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, obviously someone there and saw Idrissa Gueye and went, no, this boy's got something. This boy's statistics, he's got something that stands out. And 7.1 mil just seems like nothing now.
In today's market, that really isn't that much at all. And you're looking around thinking, yeah, and you're looking at it thinking, this guy's had a year's worth of Premiership experience as well. Yeah,
absolutely.
It's not as if you're signing him from the French league and you don't know what you're going to get. You saw him, or, you know, did scouts all over the league last season watching him. And yeah, well, we said terrible team he was in, but you can still see good players in shit teams.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they obviously saw something in him. And for 7.1 million, they've got a player who's played 30 whatever games in the Premiership last season. I think that's an absolute steal. I really do. And he's gone into a team that Koeman has very, very quickly turned that team around and turned that team. I know they lost tonight in the cunningly named EFL Cup.
Just call it the League Cup. Yeah.
I know they lost tonight, and I think they are very over-reliant on Lukaku. But when they've in the league this season going forward, they've looked very good. Bolasie's settled very quickly. He's brought Morales back into the fold, and I always wondered why Morales didn't play more under Martinez. Yeah. 'Cause I actually think Morales when I've seen him play, has always actually made a bit of a difference and actually always has had a bit of an impact on the game, but he never seemed to be able to lock down a starting position. Yeah. Having Ashley Williams next to Phil Jagielka and having Leighton Baines and Coleman there, that's a brilliant Premiership back four.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, you know, Everton are off to a great start this season and they look like when Martinez first took over from Moyes, and they suddenly all started clicking together, and it's like Martinez came in and they still had the knowledge from Moyes in terms of how to defend, but Martinez let them off the leash and all of a sudden they were attacking force to be, you know, concerned about. It's like that's kind of happened again, but Martinez has left and now they've remembered how to defend again. And it's all kind of, obviously with a couple of signings with decent experience and some money spent there as well, it's kind of all hooking up again. And they look like that team again, that team where you go, they could do top four. But obviously it's easy to say that this early in the season. Speaking of top four, there's no team better to talk about when we talk about fourth place than Arsenal, who, you know, by no coincidence have scored four as well. A routine win, albeit with a shoddy performance from the ref, but a routine win for the Arsenal.
Yeah, I thought so. And again, I think the scoreline perhaps flatters us a little bit. It didn't seem quite as easy for us to win 4-1 as it did for City to win 4-0, but it's away from home. It's against the team that's just come up. It's against the team that's just come up and actually picked up a couple of good results. So it's not as easy as you might think it's going to be.
Don't give them too much credit. I think, you know, Hull have had a decent start to the season, you know, especially given the circumstances around that club. They've had a very good start to the season, but I think Arsenal were expected to win. They did win. You're probably not going to get the most objective of opinions between the two Arsenal fans, alone on a podcast about an Arsenal win. but it was a decent enough performance. You know, they deserved the win. They should have had more, obviously, with the pen. But a lovely end to the game with that absolutely thunder bastard of a goal, which Xhaka seems to be now making a trait of, given tonight's goal as well. which I know you've caught as well. You've seen all the goals from tonight as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a good result. It was good to see some players get on the score sheet. It's good to see Theo get a goal. It's good to see Xhaka get a goal. It's nice to see us being able to score goals without Giroud up front. I think it's something we've struggled with previously. But it does now look like he's willing to give Sanchez a go up top on his own. This would look like he's willing to give Lucas a go. Lucas has scored twice again, and well, not again, sorry, he scored twice in the League Cup tonight. So it looks like he is willing to rotate. And I think, I've got to be honest, looking at Arsenal's squad, it's the best squad we've had for a long time, depth wise.
One season too late.
I know we've perhaps one season too late. Looking at the options we have in centre midfield, we've got horses for courses in that midfield now. I feel like we can pick players for certain games, and we've got players who can play when we need to shut a game out. We've got players who can play when we need to break teams down. I think there are reasons to be positive. I know I'm probably an annoyingly positive Arsenal fan.
How very dare
you? The worst of times.
Yeah,
but there are reasons to be positive from the best half of North London.
Nice, very nice. We'll gloss over that for some sense of objectivity, and move quickly to the champions before we go into our lower league, the Barrow slot. Champions Leicester finding some form. I think they'll be really happy with a 3-0 win, albeit against lesser fancied Burnley, But it comes off a midweek game against Bruges, their first Champions League game, which they won comfortably. They won this comfortably. Slimani stepped up with a few goals. There's not much about this to dislike if you're a Leicester fan.
No, and like I said, it was the first test of how would the Champions League affect them. And I think, Christ, if you're going to get a fixture to come off your first ever away game in the Champions League at home to Burnley, it doesn't get much better than that, really. Yeah, but it's still got to be done. You still got to win. No easy games in the Premiership
or the Champions League.
Champions League
game of two halves.
So,
they gave 110%. Sorry.
So they've come back from a pretty easy game abroad in the Champions League, in all fairness. And they've got a fairly routine 3-0 win at home to Burnley.
Yeah, Burnley weren't particularly at the races. They're a team that's going to struggle this season. And we've all said it, that they've not spent huge amounts of money. What money they have spent, I think they've invested fairly decently. But, I know Chris was making the case in extraordinary fashion before the season got going, while we were in the transfer window, that if you're a Burnley fan, you must be incredibly annoyed knowing how much money this team has generated in terms of its promotion and how much TV money is knocking around the Prem, that this team has spent so little on so few players.
I know that they picked up Defoe right at the end of the transfer window, and they spent a little bit of money on him. But yeah, I think it was a conversation we were having before the start of the season. I'd be pissed off if I was a Burnley fan. You pay your money, and you've seen Burnley come up, go back down, come up, go back down, and you know how much money is in the Premiership, especially this year. This year, the TV figures have been so widely publicised.
On top of that, players therefore want to come and play in the Prem because there is so much money there. Obviously not every player is a mercenary, but, it will naturally attract players with the amount of, cash rich clubs there are. Sorry, you were saying, apologies.
No, not at all. And I was just saying, I would be pissed if I was a Burnham because there are players out there they could have got. There's enough players on the market that you can pick up a couple that would improve your team coming up into the Premiership.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a long season for Burnley. I will be surprised if they don't find themselves in the bottom three of the table come the end of it, but we'll see.
We should cross that bridge. And all that.
And speaking of the bottom half, let's go to the lower half of our leagues.
Lovely work.
Yeah, do you like that? I've been working on these transitions. Yeah, just an hour every lunchtime. we should cover our lower leagues, lower league liberos. Obviously, just the two of us, so we'll just be diving into the most important teams, which is AFC Wimbledon and MK Dons. I'm going to let you go first, as we didn't stick the place out, but there's not much to report my side. So off you go, man.
So we, I think I spoke about this last week as well. We had what was looking like it could be a tricky away game to Charlton. I'm no expert of all lower league teams, but I know there's shit going down at Charlton, which makes it, a bit of a toxic place to go to, but still there was around 12,000 fans there, which is, it's still a pretty good turnout for a League One team. I know there's, we've spoken about this a few times, there are some whopping clubs, relatively whopping clubs down in League One now. But for Charlton, considering all the shit that's going on down at Charlton, to still be getting 12,000 people through the turnstiles, do they even have turnstiles anymore? through the turnstiles.
Where have you been? Yeah, go on.
I don't know what goes on down there. I'm assuming it's one man and his dog. There's 12,000 people there.
Look at you. Support a big team. And then you're like, oh, how do they do crowd safety? Yeah, go on.
What could have been a quite a tough away game down at the Valley turned into, a 2-1 win for the real Wimbledon.
Nice.
I wouldn't say it was a smash and grab job, but it looked like a fairly even game from the kind of highlights I saw and from the stats that I've read up on it. Fairly even possession, albeit Wimbledon only had two shots on target and actually scored with both of those shots. It actually finished 2-1 to Wimbledon, with their goals coming in the last third of the game. So, you know, you could suggest it was a smash and grab, but
you wouldn't do that.
No. Especially as that win puts us now 1 point behind your horrible thing.
Well, come with me if you will to Milton Keynes. And I'm sure you will because it's a lovely place to be. And witness, if you will.
Roundabouts. Big fan of the roundabouts.
The 0-0 masterpiece that was MK Dons 0, Oxford 0. Still not winning at home. This isn't a kind of coincidence now. This is a run and this is a problem. This is 9 games without a win at home. Last win came in March against QPR, which was a 2-0 win. And this was a fairly decent performance. Like, I'm not going to slag them off completely because Christ knows I don't have a right to, but you know, they had 17 shots. With 17 shots, you would expect to get more than 6 on target, but 6 on target. They looked good during the game. They looked like they were, you know, up for it. It was a decent enough performance, but they just couldn't put it away. And that's not the first time this has happened. The last game we spoke a lot about Bolton. They had a decent share of that game, especially in the second half. And that there were chances to win it. Albeit, you know, their keeper played well. And they're just not being ruthless enough. And, you know, ruthless is exactly the word that was used on their website when, you know, they spoke to Carl Robinson. I mean, a direct quote said, "We've let points slip again. The table doesn't look great at the moment and we're not stood here saying it's acceptable, but the performance in the last two games have deserved more," which I largely agree with, but they do sit 16th, just 9 points from a possible 24. I mean, this, I know it's early in the season. We all talk about, oh, well, you know, you've got to get going and things like that. But like I've said before, the points early in the season count as much as the points late in the season. This is going to get away from them soon. You know, they've just come down. They'll be expecting to challenge to go back up. You'd
be expecting them to start, although if you look at someone like Villa.
Yeah, and I'm not writing it off, but what I'm saying is this needs to be arrested. You know, you've got an experienced manager. He's one of the longest tenured managers, you know, in England. And he knows what I've got confidence that he knows what he needs to do, but it is something that needs to be addressed because it won't be too long before this becomes not a slump, but the season's gone. And
yeah, because you can see that you, with these, again, if that run suddenly goes over 10 games or 12 games, you suddenly then got, well, we're not looking at automatics anymore. I know the lower league seasons are much, much longer than the Premiership, so you have got more time to kind of recover. But if you start getting to 12, 15 games a season and you're
lower league, your teams like
Bolton and Scunthorpe running away with this league or, you know, extending a big league, you suddenly write off the champions position. Because, you know, I can see someone like Bolton running away with this league. There's, you know, they're 2 points off Scunthorpe at the top at the moment, but I can really see them starting to kind of pull away.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm sure they're hoping that the leftover quality in their team from their time in the Championship and the Premiership should really start paying off at some point.
One thing to say is, just to wrap up this, because there's not that much to say about a 0-0 game, which, you know, like I said, it's not like it didn't have its moments, but, you know, is what it is. They play Fleetwood and Bury in quick succession now, who sit seventh and third respectively, so they're not going to be easy games. But
they are, you know, Fleetwood's away from home, so you've got to be hoping your away form might kind of counteract
your
home
form
a little bit.
But like I said, it's now two games in quick succession. They've not got a run going into that, and I do worry where they'll be after those two games, but obviously it'll be interesting to see.
So the mighty AFC Wimbledon are at home to Shrewsbury. Shrewsbury sitting third from bottom, a point behind us, so I would hope that is could be thinking at least a point from that. Shrewsbury have only won once in their last five, so they're not on amazing form. Actually, that's fairly shite form.
Call it what it is.
Wimbledon picking up, three wins and a draw in the last four, in the last five games. So you'd think all the money, all the sensibly shit money would be on Wimbledon.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, before we wrap up, just a couple of quick things. First off is, do try and remember to follow us on Facebook. Like we said before, we won't spam you, or at least we'll try not to spam you. That's www.facebook.com/liberopodcast. We just give a quick shout out every time the new episode's out, just a quick reminder and a link to any articles we see. If you do want to contact us, that's also the place to do it. Do send us a message on Facebook for any of your footballing questions, any of the things you'd like to point out, if you'd like to correct us and tell how bad our opinions are, or indeed our attempts at pronouncing foreign players' names, which has been a real...
Hello. That's not in my area of expertise.
do try and help us all out with that. We would appreciate it. And one last thing to say, just before we call it quits on another podcast, is just to say, it'll be interesting to see how these midweek fixtures on the EFL Cup, the League Cup, affect the games going into next weekend. Obviously, there's a big Arsenal Chelsea game. Chelsea have had to play extra time this evening. Yeah, that'll do. Thanks. You may want to write in on Facebook and just tell us about basic words as well. They've had to play extra time. They've had to put another 30 minutes in. Whether that's going to affect them too much going into the weekend, we don't know. But it will be interesting. There's been a couple of bigger teams that have had to play longer games. Bournemouth have been knocked out tonight. They've had to play a longer game. There's more games to play tomorrow, obviously, we can't get into, but it'll be interesting to see, you know, with these big games, if there's any knock-on effect, if there's any fatigue, because some of the bigger players like Fabregas, like Hazard have played, and if that has any effect.
I think fortunately for Chelsea that Arsenal-Chelsea's the late kickoff on Saturday, so gives them a couple of hours more. I was hoping it was going to be the early kickoff, but nay, it's not.
Indeed. Well, with that, we'll bring an end to the latest edition of the Libero podcast. Thanks for joining us, just the two of us. We hope to have a more fuller contingent next week, and
a veritable foursome.
Beautifully put. Like I said, may contain sexual material. We've come full circle. It's time to say goodbye. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you again next week. Take care.
See you later.